for tuning in to the Love Breezy Bree Yoga Podcast. My name is Bree, and you can find me at lovebreezybreeyoga.com. Check out the show notes for more information, including a link to my website. Thank you so much for listening. Namaste. Welcome to session number 3 of Anatomy and Physiology for the Yoga Teacher Training. My name is Bree Morena de Santos, and in this session, we are going to discuss the anatomy of breath, or as in yoga, we call it pranayama practice or pranayama practice, and it's yogic breath. But first and foremost, I want us to start to just take a moment. Let's ground our energy. And when we ground our energy, we want to feel ourselves, literally feeling our physical self, feeling the chair we're sitting in or the earth beneath our feet, and just feeling ourselves being present. And perhaps even inviting yourself to relax through the eyebrows, the cheek muscles, feeling your shoulders relax down your back, feeling a gentle lift in the heart, a nice sensation of the heart and the belly flowing through rising and falling, and just feeling every muscle in your body begin to gently, slowly, but surely relax. In yoga, we discuss the idea of feeling the breath moving throughout your body and just feeling those sensations as you're inhaling and exhaling. Maybe inviting in some visualization. As I always tell my students, imagining that you're giving each and every cell of your body a delicious oxygen hug. Also imagining that the oxygen is moving the blood through your body. And then the blood is moving this gentle yet powerful cleansing mechanism through your body. And giving your body the nutrients it needs to do what it does in its own infinite wisdom. And every inhalation and exhalation, you are allowing your body to relax its nervous system, to energize your muscles. And we're also exercising our diaphragm. And we're going to talk a lot more about all of this. We always discuss the fact that breath is the most important part of our yoga practice. And yoga is not just about the movement of the body through those shapes, through the postures, the poses, or in Sanskrit, asanas. It's about utilizing the breath, as the breath is one of the 8 limbs of yoga. Under the sutras of Patanjali. And as we lean into the philosophy of yoga, it's important for us to really respect the idea that our breath work is what makes us advanced in our practice of asana, not lifting into handstands or twisting into poses and pretzel-like inspirational visualizations, right? Aesthetics, but rather being able to really breathe through the pose. I'm sure we've all heard a yoga teacher say, if your breath takes you out of the pose, that is perfectly fine, better than to hold your breath to maintain the pose. I always take this a step further. I used to teach gymnastics or coach gymnastics, rather. And in doing so, there are similarities between certain asanas and gymnastics movements or poses and postures. And there, of course, is a reason of that, as I may have discussed in a previous session. As the lineage was influenced by gymnastics. In any event, when we hold the breath to manage the movement in the body, I always say that is gymnastics, right? We are trying to get to a definite end result. But in yoga, we are more than anything trying to regulate the nervous system. Now, what's really fascinating is, and these are technical terms, by the way, when we inhale, we are inspiring, right? We are practicing inspiration. And when we're exhaling, we are expiring or practicing expiration. And I love that from, you know, a metaphorical sense or even a philosophical sense, but it's also a technical term as it pertains to anatomy and physiology of the breath. So inhaling and exhaling. When we inhale, as I mentioned, we are relaxing the body, or better yet, I should say, as we inhale, we are energizing the body. And as we exhale, then the body gets to release into that relaxation. It's like the inhale is prepping the body for that relaxation, especially when we're mindful about it. As we energize the muscles with the inhale, we're pushing the oxygen through the bloodstream, right? Providing those nutrients. And as we exhale, we're releasing, and in some real way, certain toxins out of the body. And in addition to, we are exercising the muscle of the heart. We are exercising the lungs. We are exercising through the organs of the body, the diaphragm, the upper thoracic muscles near the ribs and chest. And when we're engaging in what we consider to be full yogic breath, we are engaging in the big belly breathing of the diaphragm. And if you are a singer, especially if you're trained in that realm, you know how important it is to really exercise those muscles. In addition to, we talk a lot about the root to rise idea, right? Breathing and almost like drawing the roots from beneath the earth's surface. I like to say all the way up to the sun. But there's also a real importance of lateral breathing. And that's when we're engaging the side body, the lower rib cage, the back, and the pelvis. Yes, there is pelvic breathing as well. And in yoga, we can really engage in the Mula Bandha, in Pilates, pelvic floor, you know, all the way through to the Ulyala Bandha and yogic bandhas, when we are engaging in the lateral breathing techniques. I like to teach my students that depending on what pose you're in is going to offer those different breathing techniques to your body more effectively and accessibly. And if you think about it, if you're in a standing pose, let's say you're in Tadasana, mountain pose, it's going to feel really accessible to your body to inhale and feel yourself root to rise. And then as you exhale, feel yourself sort of settling back down. But that might not feel the same if you are in a pose where lateral breath might be more advantageous. So imagining that you're in child's pose, and as you're inhaling, you're sort of needing to engage the Mula Bandha for that root to rise effect. Not that that's not possible, but imagine that lateral breath sort of taking over, that shoulder to shoulder expansion through the back of the body, through the rib cage, through the side body. And when you can engage in that, you then end up engaging through that pelvic breath, right? Which is the root to rise effect. And in addition, we then start to learn how to really engage in that 360 breathing. And if you've ever been involved in dance, you might be familiar with these concepts of, or even martial arts, where you are breathing from all angles throughout the body. You are activating and almost blowing your body up like a balloon. You know, you're breathing deep into the side body, you know, through the armpits, the chest is expanding, the rib cage, the lungs are expanding through to the rib cage. You can feel the root to rise effect. You are breathing throughout the body and everything sort of puffing up in that respect. Now, don't get me wrong. I want you to be really aware that there are a multitude of pranayama practices. There are very, very advanced practices, meaning you are creating lots of different effects on the body throughout the nervous system with your breathing pattern. You know, breathing is a signal to the body. When we were born, it was very important for the baby to go through that birth canal and to be able to be presented to the new world by way of taking breath, right? And that big gasp of breath on their own and after they've, you know, come through their mother's sack and through their protective bubble, so to speak, out into the real world, right? And so taking that deep inhalation and then exhaling and hopefully audibly, right? Really just expressing that they are here and alive was really and is really important. And so is it in current time, right? So we send a deep, deep rooted signal to our bodies based on our breathing pattern. Our body doesn't need our brain to really make sense of it, but rather we are able to regulate what the nervous system's messages are receiving by way of our breathing patterns. So if we are practicing some more advanced variations of pranayama practice, we are also activating the nervous system to show up for those different patterns, which is why, bringing it back to, you know, pregnant and expecting mothers, when they're practicing their breath work and basically beginning to create muscle memory, they are trying to remind their body that through great pain and lots of overwhelming information and an urgency, that there's a breathing pattern that we want to adopt so that we can create the most safe and regulated response for baby, right? And when you think about it from that perspective, that's very true of many other ideas and schools of thought. When we are upset, we take a few moments and we catch our breath. We calm down. You know, when we see other people upset, we try to engage them into relaxing their body. If someone's having a panic attack or an asthma attack or anything that's dysregulating their breathing patterns, we want to see if we can relax the body first so that we don't end up creating other responses to the way that the body's receiving the response from breath. So if we're that's sending a signal to the body intuitively or instinctively that we are in trouble of some sort, right? We're possibly afraid, or we're going into a survival response, and the body's going to gear up, you know, adrenaline and hormone receptors are going to show up to try to help us to maintain whatever it is the body thinks it needs to survive. And there are definitely times where that is absolutely warranted and needed. But for the most part, we don't want to live in a perpetual state of, you know, high arousal and overextension of breath. So certain pranayama practices are not particularly safe for all bodies. You know, those who have potential triggers of mental health concerns might not benefit from maybe really explosive and heated and fast and energizing pranayama practices, as well as those who suffer from high blood pressure or even in some cases lower blood pressure, as well as in different poses, it might not be advantageous to also be inverting, right? Your head's below your heart while also practicing certain breath work. So in all of the different types of breath work, it's really important that we know what's best for our bodies, and especially for those who are in like all level settings. Now, if you're working with someone one-on-one and you can really monitor their practice and you have the information to be able to guide them through, then that's amazing. And that's how I would present really getting deeper and deeper into pranayama practices. Also, there's lineages of yoga that really lend themselves to deeper practices of pranayama. And when you get into pranayama and you're really expressing what benefits yogic breath can bring to your life, especially when you couple it or quadruple it, with other limbs of yoga or even just other modalities like hand mudras or, of course, asana, meditative practices, mindful practices even, you can start to see why it's so important that breath work is probably the most advanced part of your practice. In this session, in this particular lesson, I should say, really, in the live session, we actually practice a lot of movement with breath, how it felt to do lateral breathing in certain yoga poses or asana practice, and as well as what we preferred, right? Because what works for me might not work for someone else for a multitude of reasons. And it is always important for us to consider what ailments, injuries, and even just where we're at mentally and emotionally in any given time. You know, really activating the breath can also activate emotions and other considerations in the body. Remember, you are pushing that blood through your body with your oxygen of the breath, and you are not only energizing your body, you're relaxing your body. And so if you think about inhaling as gearing up and providing the oomph for the relaxation part, for the exhale, it can also make sense why when we play around with the different practices, if you take a very deep, long inhale and you take an explosive exhale, if you take a deep inhale and you take a very long exhale, if you match the amount of time it takes to inhale and the amount of time it takes to exhale, all these different ways that we can work with just our normal natural breathing patterns with how we can receive that into our body and expel that from our body as well. Now, when you're just practicing your restful, normal breath, you can just begin to allow your body to exert or to exercise through the diaphragm. And then as you start to fill the belly with your big belly breath, you're actually expanding through the diaphragm. And for some, especially many of us who practice just our generalized superficial breathing, which is just survival breathing, we have really weak diaphragms. And this isn't necessarily anything you need to worry about as far as, oh no, but rather be able to start to work with better. Now, of course, if you have asthma or even allergies that can induce breathing issues or breathing, limitations or just making you feel more short of breath than feels normal for you, you want to be considerate of that. Trying to do things in different capacities, right? Maybe see what it feels like to practice big belly breathing and exercising through the diaphragm, which I'll talk about also a little bit more in detail in just a moment. Inside, in the morning, before bed, outdoors, in different environments to see if you have different responses. And of course, if you really want to be a scientist of your life, you will take adequate notes so that you can really start to evaluate your own body. And the more we get to know ourselves, the more useful we are for students. Sometimes I feel that those who work in services, and that includes yoga teachers, we tend to focus outwardly. So we want to know all about you. We want to take the notes on you, But I've come to realize that, the best practitioner is those who really treat themselves like their most important student and really ask the questions and the and really challenge themselves to answer those questions for themselves. And then that helps to lend to being able to guide others the same way or even better. So when we create really intentional audible exhales, like, or as I said in our live session, you know, sometimes if you say something to someone, especially a teenager, and you give them an instruction and they go, and then, you know, it almost feels disrespectful. But in a way, we should remind ourselves, okay, they are self-regulating by having this really audible response, right? Like the baby crying, that's an audible response. That's a regulatory response that the nervous system is looking for, right? It's actually really disconcerting when a human holds their breath, right? Unless it's, you know, an athletic endeavor. But if you are holding your breath, right? Like if a child's holding their breath, it's almost like you're holding in your emotions, right? And you're tensing up and you're stopping the flow, right? So if you think about the breath moving through the body, like cars on a freeway, and then you hold the breath, it's like the car stop. And maybe that's important at times, but also not very good if that's not an intention. So we want to be mindful of audible exhales, including even yawning, like especially those loud yawns, those you know, just really stretchy yawnies. That's really, really great for the body. Okay. So when we have these audible exhales, which I love to do at the beginning of my practice, I love to start my practice just by being like, you know, just really settling in. Even, you know, toward the end before Shavasana, just letting some audible exhales leave my body. You know, after a difficult phone call or even just anything where I just need a breather, you know, it's like just do a few audible exhales and bring yourself back to the present. Also activates a few additional sensory points in the mind-body connection as well. It's a nice somatic release. So, and it's even more of a somatic release when you add in like a nice stretch, a nice exhale, and an audible mention, you know? So all of those things come together and it's just like, it's just such a hug to the body, to the nervous system. So in our live session, we did practice with straw breathing. You can actually find many variations of practicing this from 30 seconds up on YouTube, for instance, that's really easy and really safe for most populations, including children. And it's basically a certain technique through the straw. You know, you have a straw. There's even breathing straws or pranayama straws now that you can purchase, but you can do this with just a good old-fashioned straw. And you can practice different techniques as far as how you want to utilize straw breath. Or straw breathing, you know, rather it's inhaling outside of the straw, placing the straw in your mouth and exhaling only through the straw. Inhaling through the straw, pressing your tongue at the tip, holding the breath, and then exhaling out of the straw. There's a few different techniques, so I would invite you to do a little bit of research and play around with a few techniques. If I can link some in the day in today's notes, in this session's notes, I will, especially the one we did live, then that would be great. We did a very basic variation as well, similar to the balloon breathing, which really exercises the diaphragm. Straw breathing does so as well, and maybe is even a smidge safer and more accessible than even maybe the balloon breath was. And then getting into gentle pranayama practice, right? Gentle breath work and yogic breath. Sitali breathing, which is cooling of the breath. So Sitali. And this is where you pretend you're sucking through a straw. It almost makes a straw-like feeling in the tongue where it feels like it sort of wraps around. And then as you breathe in, you feel this cooling effect of the body. And I feel like we don't do this well enough in yoga, and especially in just like an all levels class. Such a quick way to calm the body, to cool it down. And it's such a good practice after heating up the body intentionally or after holding really challenging poses. And in many cases, a little bit more of an advanced practice, practicing cooling breath while in challenging poses. And then, of course, Ujjayi breath, which is probably the most common introductory breath work practice, which is a heating effect. And that is where you're getting that ocean-like sound in the back of the throat. You know, in yoga, we practice breathing through the nose and exhaling out of the nose. And we also practice inhaling through the nose and almost creating a sensation of force release as it exits through the creases of the lips, right? So we're not necessarily opening the mouth and doing a full audible exhale, or those who are familiar with Pilates or similar activities where it's a full exhale out of the mouth, right? A full release. Instead, we are almost like holding in the air in the bubble and creating that heat in the gut. And this really does aid in digestion, but it also helps to move things around in the body. It can be a release, right? So I feel like many people don't realize that a lot of the practices we do, you know, in yoga, especially in like in a class with others, helps us to digest, you know, rest and digest. Like that is the most healthy way for the body to respond and to prevent disease. And it's very Ayurvedic, right? To try to focus on how do we better digest. So we're always looking for ways to make sure that we are healthfully digesting our food and toxins in the body and even digesting information in the mind. And the only way we can do that is by letting it go, right? And so, you know, a lot of yoga poses help us to do just that, you know, twist and pelvic expansion poses and hip girdle release poses. These are to help us really detoxify in a million different ways, you know, but sometimes this means really just expelling from the body. This can mean literal urinating and defecating. This can also mean, you know, releasing moisture throughout our exhalations, right? Sweating through the body. This can mean, especially if we have digestive issues or almost like a roadblock, this is where, you know, gases start to release out of the body, rather it's through burps or flagellants, right? Definitely reaching for all of these more technical terms. But, you know, a big part of practicing yoga is really to activate the body in all of these different ways. And it's really Ayurvedic and therapeutic when coupled with practicing at the most advantageous time of the day for us, knowing what that even is and how that even works for the body, and also nutritional ways that we live our lives, right? All of it should be working together, staying hydrated and adding things into our diet that helps that process along. So pranayama practice is a deep evoking practice to the muscles. And it is also a beautiful way to let go and release. And it's spiritual too, because when you add in personal mantras and mottos and intentions, you can really start to feel like you are receiving and letting go, or you're inspired and expiring things as well on your inhales and exhales. So we talked in addition to about when we are trying to inhale and exhale through the poses. Where does the full yogic breath, big belly, diaphragm breathing happen? When should we not practice that, if ever? You know, there are lots of different schools of thoughts and also different disciplines that do things a little bit different. However, when we are thinking about learning this from our current perspective, at the levels that we are hoping to learn this at for teaching to different people where you are not able to learn about their practice, you know, and some of the more advanced disciplines that really emphasize certain pranayama practices, they also really emphasize progression of poses and having a teacher and guide that helps guide you through those progressions, not you just taking them on and trying to get somewhere. It's more like, are we in the pose? Are we breathing in the pose? Are we grounded in the pose? You know, are we practicing the pose to the fullest capabilities that our mind body has to offer for the pose? And then do we feel comfortable moving to the next thing, right? So that's what makes this a little challenging when we're studying yogic philosophy, especially in teacher training atmospheres. Because, you know, yoga really is, like anything else, so much more intentional when we can understand more than just teaching in a group setting. But we also want to be able to teach safely to various humans without also being concerned that we are potentially causing an issue instead of being more helpful. So in doing so, we want to err on the side of caution. We want to err on the side of less is more, and simple is beautiful, right? Simple is challenging in and of itself, because you almost have to be comfortable with being present where you're at in its most simplest form. You won't have something more challenging or something more, you know, aesthetically pleasing to take your mind off of what really matters. Okay. So for most human bodies, right, it is definitely more advantageous to exhale into the peak of the pose. So a good example is when you're going into a backbend, right? You want to inhale into extension so your heart opens, right? Remember, your heart and your lungs are sharing space in your rib cage, right? They're in this protective bubble, so to speak. And every time we take an inhale, we're activating the heart chakra, right? So when we exhale, our heart begins to almost, like, for lack of better description and word, it sort of deflates, right? It's expanded, and now it's relaxing and letting go. And so is our muscles, our body. Also, if you think about it from the technical perspective we mentioned, when you inhale, you are activating your body. You are energizing your muscles. So if you're looking to, you know, really activate what's coming, you're going to inhale into that. And if you're looking to relax and release into that thing, you're going to exhale into that thing. So if you think about a sprinter, they're going to inhale, get their muscles all pumped, and boom, exhale, release, and go, right? And the same thing happens. It's like we want our body to relax into the movement, even if that movement is a constant moving movement like running. We still want to relax into that. We don't want the muscles to tense up, to cramp up, and so forth, right? Which is why we're doing like twist or upside down, even in an inversion of any capacity. We do not want to hold our breath there, right? We are like raising our blood pressure on the inhale. We're, you know, getting ready to propel the blood through the system as the oxygen flows out. So that will give you, I think, a sensibility. Of course, in more advanced practices and also different pranayama practices, you may hear or be guided into different variations. Also, there's different things that are happening in the flexion and inflection of the spine. And there are times where you can play with your inhalations and exhalations, such as cat-cow is a great one, right? We're doing the flexion through the spine. We tend to inhale through cow pose, right? Big belly breath, right? Belly drops, inhale, which is activating that heart space. The heart's lifting. We want to actually activate that motion. We are really engaging through that diaphragm. And then as we exhale, we can release through the spine and let fluid go through that flexion of mad cat back. But it's could easily be said that it's equally advantageous and safe as well to do it the opposite, right? Inhale on cat as you're rounding through the spine, maybe drawing the belly in, maybe even activating Mula Bandha on that inhale way better than you would have on the exhale, and then exhaling, releasing, and getting a different effect through the heart, the lungs, and the diaphragm, right? So in some poses, it could feel really good to practice the differences, but also be mindful that you should be really advanced in whatever that pose is, even if it seems like it's a simple standing backbend. Okay. So if you think about it this way, if you're breathing in poses, you know, you're either trying to open up the heart, remember the heart and the lungs and the rib cage. If you are focusing on back bends, if you're focusing on pelvic openers like Malasana or Yogi Squat, if you are, you know, utilizing the bandhas, right? The bottoms of the feet, the palms of the hands, the breath work, being able to expand through those motions and really just knowing what your intention is and understanding your why, okay? Perhaps if I'm working with someone who's expecting, how we practice breath work might look very different than if I'm working with someone who's a swimmer, okay? So just being able to understand that. We discussed in our live session proprioception so much because I believe it's so important and it goes hand in hand with breath work. Where you are in time and space, right? So the idea of proprioception is, do you know where your body is without looking? Like, do you know if I tell you to place your feet hip distance apart or as wide as your hips are, you know, would you need to look down and be able to know if you're too wide or too narrow in comparison to your hips? If I put you on your back and I tell you to draw your knees into your chest and then to lengthen through your quadriceps or the front of your legs and take your legs all the way to the sky, toes pointing towards your nose and then toes pointing away from you, and then we draw those legs as we bend the knees back into like a tabletop variation, right? So the feet are floating, but your knees are in line with your hips. Could you feel what that would feel like for your body? Or do you need the visual or even the touch to know, are my knees in line with my hips? If you're in a warrior pose, do you need to look down to feel your knee over your ankle? Or do you have that sensibility? I'm not saying that there's a wrong or right way to go about this. And if you need to look and visualize or feel with touch to be able to get there, that's a bad thing. But rather, I want you to think about it as it's more of a sensory test, right? Just like balancing is a sensory test. Just like really even taking dristi, which is a proprioceptive response. It's living in time and space, right? Dristi in yoga is a focal point in its most basic understanding, although it's much more than that. It can be as simple as taking your eye gazes to a spot on the wall, although I don't like to introduce dristi that way. It is useful, but it's almost taking it's the dristi of the pose. Are your eye gazes off the tip of your nose, the tip of your finger, you know, the tip of your toe? You know, where are your eye gazes so that you can find alignment, so that you can find proprioception? And it's really advanced when you think about it that way. As well, if you want to do a sensory test, right, which we did in live session, you would think about it from a perspective of balancing poses, right? That's the best sensory test you can offer yourself. And that's something that you see a lot of proactive practitioners, right? Rather it's, you know, Ayurvedic practitioners and doctors or any, you know, any of the naturopathic type practices, all the way into reactive practices such as Western medicine, where balancing is a big part of how to understand where you're at in your proprioception. It's also being able to take a cue, right? So if a teacher gives a verbal cue and not a visual cue, can you take that cue into your body? Again, if you're used to dancing through instruction or even doing certain Pilates, especially reformers, or even certain athletic endeavors where there's a cue that needs you to be able to monitor your body into that. There is a learning that probably needs to also happen, not just some intuitive cue, although could be. That's a way of being able to get into the sensory point of your proprioception, being able to correct yourself when you need to, and intuitively, maybe even hopefully over time, instinctively. This helps prevent injury more than anything, but it's also a great way to have mind-body awareness. So some proprioception activities that we all do is knowing where to scratch that itch. You know, we feel an itch somewhere and our fingers follow that itch versus feeling the itch and not knowing where it's at and can't get to it. And not because you can't reach, but rather it's like you can't find that itch beneath the surface of your skin. Also, think about when you use a pen or pencil and you're writing. You know, when you first started writing as a child, you would probably like snap, like, you know, the lead of a pencil. And now you know just how much force you need. Perhaps even pressing your foot on a pedal, right? Pedal to the metal, and knowing how much it needs so that you know how fast you're going to go. Versus when you first started driving and you would hit the brakes too hard or hit the gas too hard and how dangerous technically that really is. But it was a learning curve, right? But once you learned it, you had the awareness. Also, holding a delicate item without breaking it. So like thinking about holding like an egg in your hand and not grasping too hard. And I mentioned in the live session, because I think most people have read the book or seen the movie of Mice and Men, where Lenny has no proprioception and he's holding the mice and he thinks it's his little friend, but he crushes it, right? And just not knowing your own strength and your own grip and that sort of thing. And then, of course, also coordination, right? So riding a bike, roller skating, rollerblading, snowboarding, skiing, those are all, again, back on the balance part, which is the highest form and level of proprioception when you're testing it for yourself. But also just realizing that that is all stuff we had to learn, and we had to learn that mind-body awareness. And again, through yoga, it helps us to translate that into other endeavors, right? Which is why, you know, yoga is so good for athletes in particular, but also from people who are suffering from different degenerative, you know, muscular or muscle diseases or spinal ailments. I mean, even just simple injuries and ailments, you know, whether it's through the ankle or the knee or even like a shoulder can kind of take us off balance. You know, we don't have that tail that we may have had once upon a time, you know, that gives us the balance that we need. Okay. So again, why does this matter? Well, you know, injury prevention. If we know how much pressure we should be adding on our wrist in downward facing dog, if we know how much energy we need to place into a body part in a certain pose, do we know how to evenly distribute the weight in our body, like in between both feet? Think about warrior two or even just a standing pose. Do we have that sensory awareness? You know, this is also a good point to mention. You know, yoga, although challenging and difficult and maybe even frustrating, is so good for those who have suffered from strokes, as well as those who have neurodivergencies, you know, whether it's autism or other, you know, things that kind of can mimic in the body, right? In addition, proprioception and these different ways that yoga helps us test our awareness of our body is we get a somatic release, right? So our somatic nervous system, which is all of the nervous system except for the brain and spinal cord, actually allows the moving and controlling of the muscles. So when you do a somatic release, sometimes when I'm teaching yoga and we inhale our hands to the sky and we exhale fold forward, I will invite students to wiggle their fingers on the way down and have a somatic release, right? Like get more of your muscles, more of your nervous system or the nerves of your nervous system activated and involved, right? And just helping with that proprioception. It's like your brain goes, whoa, the fingers are wiggling. You know, it's like, whoa, this is cool. This gives me like something else to focus on, something else to essentially master and learn how to do. When babies are learning, they are activating all of these areas all of the time. There's such a newness to it, but you know, they're constantly trying to pick up things and see what they're able to manage and maintain in their development. And good development is being able to make those milestones, right? Being able to balance and walk, being able to hold a cup or hold the head up, or, you know, eventually smaller motor skills, being able to, you know, pick up little things with their fingers and and eventually being able to tie shoes and ride bikes and drive cars and do yoga, right? The evolution. So it's quite important to have a general sensibility of how all of this goes down. You have your sensory inputs and outputs, right? So when we practice grounding practices and we bring ourselves physically to a place of understanding, we are doing just that. We're having a sensory connection of mind-body, and we are inviting the mind and the body to have those sensory inputs and outputs so that when we continue to go through that, not only are we co-regulating, we're utilizing our breath, we're doing all the things. When we do have a challenge that faces us, right, like a balancing challenge, our body doesn't go into survival response, right? We don't go into fight or flight in warrior three or in tree pose, you know, which I always talk about with my students. It's a matter of your body being able to recognize when it's appropriate to overactivate. If we overactivate too much, right, a lot of disorders can come from that. You know, rather it's, you know, activating histamine releases and autoimmune releases and just, you know, again, on the very simplest form, muscle cramping. Things that where the body is basically fatigued or it needs adrenaline and an adrenal release to be able to push us through that fatigue. And again, which is why athletes who push themselves beyond their normal limit, right? Their natural nervous system regulatory limit, right? For performance, need a lot of recovery, rest, recovery, and so on to be able to bring things back to normal and make sure that their rest and digest is happening. So if you want to know how healthy you are, you just need to really monitor your digestive tract, you know, see how often you eliminate. Do you sweat a lot? Do you, you know, what is your body trying to tell you? Again, this is a beautiful way for you to be able to know how your nervous system is responding, and then you'll have a lot more information to help you into the proprioceptive responses, the balance testing, the need to be able to be present, truly, okay? It's hard to be present if the body isn't relaxed from a deep internal perspective, right? How relaxed can you really be if your stomach is tight, your digestive tract is tight, if you are having challenges, you know, really releasing in those spaces first and foremost. I won't even get into trauma. I won't even get into how that affects these areas and how we could end up accidentally being in a state of stress all of the time. So yeah, a good litmus test and a good marker is how does your digestive tract really function? And how well do you sleep and rest? And if you're resting, you're digesting, right? All right. So we discussed in our live session briefly how inversions and internal and external rotations and how our hand and foot placement help proprioception. So, you know, a good example is those who suffer from vertigo, right? Which you can get from swimming, right? Like swimmer's air. But it's just when you're off balance and it's happening, basically the mind is sending the signal to the body. And, you know, deep inside the ears, you know, our ears are so important. And deep inside, those nerve endings are almost like little receptors, like little antennas, helping us to feel ourselves in time and space. It's really actually quite fascinating. And that's why when we have hearing challenges, we sometimes also have other proprioceptive challenges. A personal story, my right ear has a little bit of, probably could be classified as legally deafness, to be honest. And so my proprioception can be a little bit off. I can tend to lean a little bit right, a little bit left, and sometimes not realize like how close my shoulder is to like a wall, you know, like might bump into it or bump past it. And as a kid, I was constantly not aware of where my body was in time and space. As an adult, my hand-eye coordination sometimes has to work really hard to make sure that my body follows, right? So if I'm dancing or I'm, you know, holding a balancing pose. Drishti is so important for me. And in dance, it's like marking the spot, right? But also our spotting, but also driving. I really notice like I have to be really mindful and know, have a lot of awareness of how big my car is or how not big it is, so I don't overestimate or underestimate, and really being able to utilize different markers to help me stay streamlined, you know? So our hearing is really, you know, deep within our earlobes, you know, our ear canal. There is, and really, if you think about it, it's like connected to the throat chakra, and I won't even get into some of the, you know, esoteric ideas about that right now. But also just from a total anatomical perspective, those antennas help us because it allows us to either lean into other sensory points, right? Helps us to guide us through that. But also when we regulate how the blood flows through our body, right? So when we're in an inversion, we're upside down, blood's rushing to our head, we stand straight up, we're really dizzy, for instance, right? Our antennas are a little bit discombobulated. It's really important why we practice the breath and we release out of those inversions with the breath, right? We're trying to make sure that everything is allowing us to feel ourselves in time and space, because probably the best time you feel like you're flying is when you're somewhere between that dizziness effect through the antennas. And then, of course, you know, when you have your hand and feet placement, which is a big part of the Bandha series, right, of the body, but it also helps us to understand exactly where we're at in time and space because we can feel it, which is why grounding exercises help us to understand what that even means. It might seem like it's self-explanatory or even instinctive. If your hands are on the ground, you can feel the ground. If your feet are on the ground, you can feel the ground. But we tend to move through that grounding effect that's offered to us without feeling it, right? It's almost like we're just floating. So we have to make the mind-body connection, right? And then also even in internal and external rotations, right? Through the arms, the shoulder girdles, the hips, the legs, you know, being able to even just feel that and feel that response in the body gives us a deep awareness of where we're at just within ourselves. So we talked about Drishti, right? Drishti helps to activate awareness and concentration, focus. It helps us to activate the muscles we are trying to activate, because when we go into Drishti, we can bring our awareness to where we would like it to be. Drishti also helps us align our posture, right? So thinking where the eyes go, the body follows. Not always true, but a great way to begin the ideas of utilizing Drishti and how it helps with proprioception. And most importantly, we discussed the idea of repetitive stress injuries. And when we have repetitive stress injuries, it actually changes our proprioceptors. So think about carpal tunnel. So if we have these repetitive stress injuries, we actually tend to either dull the nerves that help us to stay aware of where we're at, so that we can push past. Like it's almost like the performance, athletic performance or the athlete perspective. It's like the body wants to go, okay, you're going to keep doing this. This doesn't feel good. So I'm going to go ahead and turn off those nerves for now. I don't know what effect this is going to have on you. You know, this carpal tunnel might make it really challenging for you to type or really lock up your body in some other way, but we're going to go ahead and do it anyway because you are pushing past your comfort zone. So being more aware of what feels good for your body and not being in a performance perspective is what yoga offers. And you see a lot of ex-athletes needing yoga, right, to bring back that mind-body awareness. And if you're lucky, yoga could be a part of your proactive plan as well. So this is also important outside of athletic endeavors, right? You know, we all have something that we do consistently that's not necessarily advantageous for the body. You know, we all tend to lean to one side or, you know, put a lot of weight into one foot over the other. Or even just driving, we tend to be more one foot dominant, right? And then our different daily activities might also add stressors to the body, repetitive stress injuries in particular. So being able to practice yoga and offer that opportunity for your body to recalibrate is really nice. All right, so now I'm hoping that you have an appreciation, right? Not just an understanding, because I feel like some of this is like, oh yeah, it's like an aha moment, right? It's like, I feel like I knew this. I knew this in some different context. I might have known lots of different bits and pieces of this, but altogether, it's like, woohoo, you know, aha, let's do it. So when you focus on your breath and you're able to activate Drishti and you're able to have a mind-body connection and a somatic release, you know, can you imagine how wonderful that is for your body, for your mind, for your practice? And if nothing else, just remembering that when you inhale, you energize your muscles. When you exhale, you relax your nervous system. And there are great times to hold your breath, you know, if we're doing it intentionally. It exercises your diaphragm. It can slow your heart rate, right? It can give you an opportunity to reset. It gives you cardiovascular strength. It can also give you muscle recovery. And it can enhance your VO2 max. I won't go deep into any of these because the average person is trying to de-stress their body, you know, but performance-driven bodies might really benefit from certain pranayama practices that do invite more intentional breath-holding techniques. So even though today's session or today's lesson from session number 3 seems very short and concise in comparison to the others, I feel that the live session, we had to really work these ideas and concepts out through our body. So we took a lot of time to feel what that would feel like, to explore the different variations of these through the poses. So if you're listening and you want to really focus on this, you know, really get deeper involved in understanding how to activate cooling breath, heated breath, right? To understand how strong your own diaphragm is, to feel if you have any constraints in your breath or any feeling of deregulation after you practice some very generalized and maybe even simplistic pranayama practices. And allow your muscles to grow. Allow your body to get used to it. Don't try to go from 0 to 100 because that makes you feel like an advanced yoga practitioner. In addition to, there's different times in our lives where things are going to feel different seasons, different times of day, full belly, empty belly. There are also different practices that require different things so that you can really get deeper into those different practices as well. So there's more, much more than I've been able to generalize in today's practice or today's lesson, I should say. You know, we can get way deeper into bandhas. We can get way deeper into Drishti and obviously into pranayama. And today, my goal and hope is that you're able to feel more comfortable exploring those deeper topics in the future. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And I look forward to session number 3. I am trying to find my notes and see if I can tell you what that will look like. Oh, yes, I can. So we're going to be talking about session number 4, right? In our live session that's coming up super soon and the lesson that will follow, we will probably delve deeper into Drishti and bandhas because we'll be talking about the anatomy of meditation and the brain. And so it's going to actually build upon today's lesson, but I'm really excited about that as well because I would love to demystify very accessible meditative practices, mindful practices with the 5 senses, and also being able to then understand why asana clustering could help in a meditative practice, especially a moving meditative practice, and how the brain really works with that. And again, when we're thinking about proprioception, we want the body, we don't want to do something that activates one part of the body, right? So you're in an inversion in 1 minute, and then the next minute you're standing on one leg. We want the body to feel like that transition was relaxing to the nervous system, right? So unless you have some intentional reason for destabilizing your nervous system by not creating a cohesive effect, right? Homeostasis in the movement, then we want to do that, right? We want the body to feel grounded at all times when possible, or have the ability to bring itself back. And we will be talking about stabilizing the body. So why there are some mobility issues or challenges that the body may face. And then also, of course, yoga nidra. And I really think the more yoga nidra we do, the better we will be able to engage in rest and digest. And yoga nidra is so beautifully accessible and so creatively customizable. You know, it can be as creative of a release as a guide wants it to be or as a student wishes to partake in. So thank you for listening to this. And as we end today's practice, please just take a moment for yourself. Feel your breath. Maybe bring your hands to prayer center for namaste or even to your heart space where your lungs and heart open through the chakra, and just be grateful, be filled with love, and practice with intention. Namaste. Thank you so much for listening to Yoga Podcast created in 2018. Did you know that you can listen to hundreds of free audio yoga classes dedicated to meditation, mindfulness practices, and of course, asana, as well as tons of amazing information for your personal and sacred practice on and off of the mat? Check out today's show notes for a link to my website, lovebreezybreeyoga.com. You will also find a link to iloveyogatherapy.org, a new online resource center for yoga therapy and somatic healing practices and techniques. You will find a ton of information, videos, and articles and case studies if you are interested in learning more about yoga therapy and Ayurvedic practices. Thank you so much for listening. Go in peace. Namaste.